Hello and welcome to The Wound Doctors, a podcast series dedicated to the study and improved treatment of wounds. These episodes are brought to you by ConvaTec, pioneering trusted medical solutions to improve the lives they touch. Rod Murray's my name, and today we're tackling some big issues in the arena of health and in particular wounds. With me is Dr. Francis Henshaw, and Dr. Fran, these big ticket issues are serious, but on the upside, they have brought back to us one of our favourite podcast guests and someone who it has been far too long since we've seen. Tell the listeners who's sitting in the studio with us and then tell them what we're going to be talking to this person about.
Oh, Rod, I'm really excited. It's my colleague from Western Sydney University. She used to be Dr. Kate McBride, but since she's last been on the Wound Doctor, she's now Associate Professor Kate McBride. So congratulations, Kate. Clearly your academic career's gone a lot better than mine.
Well, you bailed out. What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, they don't promote you for that, do they?
No, they don't.
So, Kate is also the president of the Public Health Association of New South Wales.
Well, watch our P's and Q's then.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever
presence of importance.
Have we ever had a president?
I don't think
on
we have,
before?
Not that I know of.
So it's lovely to see you again, Kate. And really, I want to help unpick a big problem called wounds. So each year, according to this document that was put out by Wounds Australia, over 420,000 Australians will suffer from a chronic wound. Over 3 billion of the nation's aged care and healthcare budgets will be spent on chronic wounds. And really sadly, people with chronic wounds have huge out-of-pocket expenses of about $4,000 per person. And with most people over the age of 65, this puts a lot of pressure on pensioners and retirees. So it's a huge public health problem, isn't it, Kate?
It is a huge public health problem, Fran.
Well, why doesn't anyone know about it?
Look, I think the causes of that are really complex and multiple, and it really depends on which way you're looking at the treatment of wounds as well. So, number one, are we looking at treating acute wounds? And really, I think we've discussed this in previous podcasts, is that the research that underpins successful treatment of wounds is really difficult to get it to be robust enough to actually drive funding in this area. So the problem is, if there's not robust enough evidence, it's really difficult to get the government to come on board and provide spending for this type of issue.
Okay, so it's highlighting a problem with an evidence-based approach that actually drives governments to put money into solving them. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yeah. So you need the research there to show that there's a reason to actually treat a problem. And there's so many competing issues out there in public health, it's really difficult to know which one to pick. So naturally, you would expect the government to pick something that has evidence behind it that drives them to take action on an issue.
So I'm one of those people who gets quite indignant quite often, as Ron,
as we know that, Fran.
So I'm like, want to stamp my feet and say, wounds are really important. So what is everyone interested in if it's not wounds? What are the public health priorities?
I guess it really depends on which part of public health you're looking at. So, you know, if you're thinking about the upcoming New South Wales election, for example, the upcoming priorities are piling even more money into our overburdened hospital system and perhaps giving some more wages to nurses and people like that. Whereas from the actual preventative public health perspective, we're probably most interested in things like vaping at the moment and preventing harms from gambling.
Wow. So it's really funny when you talk about health, you always imagine about diseases. But I guess when you look at things like gambling, although, you know, it's not a disease in itself, it has huge fallout, doesn't it? And causes a lot of misery and mental health problems and probably physical health problems that result from having no money from gambling.
That's exactly right. But I think it's important to outline at this point that even though you wouldn't directly think of it as being a health problem, there's still a lot of evidence that's been generated to show what those social and health impacts have been that have been caused by problem gambling in the population. And that's why it has become such a social issue, but also a health issue that governments are really sitting up and taking action on. So we know that the Liberal government, for example, has promised a number of measures to try and control gambling. And that's because the evidence sits there to make them act on this problem.
We're wading into politics here, and that always gets dangerous, of course, Kate, because on the other side of that equation is, of course, a massive industry that provides loads of money to governments and others as well. So let's not get into that.
This is true.
I just want to zoom out a little bit. Fran mentioned it in the intro, and ever since we started this podcast, I must have told this to 30 people, $3 billion a year we spend on wounds. I find that staggering. Most of the people I tell find that staggering. Mm-hmm. How does $3 billion stack up against some of those glamour issues like gambling and those? Because you've clearly got a problem, as you say, with the evidence-based issues of attracting funding to looking at wounding in the wounds in the public health system. But I wonder also how it stacks up in terms of the size of the problem itself. $3 billion is not insignificant, but goodness me, the health budget's much, 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 much larger than that, isn't it?
Yeah, the health budget is, as you say, it's much, much larger. It's billions. It's huge. But for the government really has to pick priorities in terms of spending. And I'm sorry, I'm not going back into the political field again, but there are so many competing priorities. And even trying to get governments to spend money on preventative health, which might prevent wounds in the first place by, for example, better preventing people from getting diabetes so they don't go on to have foot ulcers, which we know are really difficult wounds to treat. And so there's such competition to try and get money into any of these areas. And so, and the problem is when it is a hidden problem like wounds, because I think it's fair to say it is a fairly hidden problem, it's really hard to direct even more costs. And particularly when that the amount of money that's being spent on wounds doesn't seem to sit anywhere. I mean, I don't really see, as a public health person, from the things that I read around government spending, it's very difficult to actually pick apart what is being spent on wounds.
Well, there's no wound budget per se.
There's no wound budget.
Right.
Yeah, and it does seem to happen in silos. So, for example, I had a PhD student who graduated last year and he was looking at the burden of diabetic foot ulcers in New South Wales. And he used a data set, which I'm sure you're familiar with, called the 45 and Up. And he was able to look at the costs and both the tangible and the intangible costs. So tangible costs are the cost of the dressing, intangible costs are the cost of not being able to go to work. And of course, a bit like gambling, it's the intangible costs that are often huge. We're probably not measuring them very well in wounds. And because there's so many different types of wounds, it's like we measure them in diabetic foot ulcers, but we might not have that information about venous leg ulcers. And herein lies the problem, I think, doesn't
it? Yeah, I think you make a really good point, Fran, because I suspect it might be also the way that wounds are recorded and what diseases they're attributed to. So rather than being in a disease group themselves, so I'm speaking as an epidemiologist now who somebody works in data, I don't think there's entire data sets that are dedicated to wounds. It's attributed to diabetes foot ulcers, for example, or venous leg ulcers. And so they're not grouped together properly to show the true burden and impact of wounds. But going to your second point around looking at the social and health impacts and the burden of disease from wounds, it's really underdone and we don't really understand the impact of wounds on people's everyday lives.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that there is this real need to accumulate this evidence, but it's very, very difficult to collect the evidence that we need to highlight this issue.
Hmm. Is there also an element of it, I imagine, you see this in charities, Kate, the glamour, the sexy charities, the ones that really attract
breast cancer.
Those sorts of things, that's exactly right. Wounds, not that people don't die because of wounds, there's not a huge numbers of deaths because of wounds. Does that play some factor? You imagine you've got to prioritise. If you're in an emergency room, you prioritise the person who's going to die next, don't you? Then the one after. Is there an element of that as well in deciding?
I think there is because, you know, we even see across different cancer types. I've just mentioned breast cancer and we all know it's a really, you know, I hate to say it, it's a glamorous type of cancer, but that's largely been driven by philanthropic funding. And you know, and the women who've been involved and who've had breast
marketing
cancer, they market it. It's been amazing marketing. Whereas something like wounds, as you say, it's not particularly glamorous, but there aren't those organisations behind wounds as a whole condition, as it, you know, if that makes sense, who are actually driving the glamour of wounds and actually driving the funding from whether it's government funding or philanthropic funding and the marketing. And yeah, it's not a glamorous condition, but it still needs to have that sort of push behind it. And until you get people behind wounds, you're not really going to attract any sort of funding. We don't have a National Wound Day, do we, as far as I'm aware?
We have a Wounds Awareness Week, but I don't think there's much awareness around it, to be quite honest. And we do have a Peak Body Wounds Australia, but I think it is really hard to highlight these problems. And, you know, you've said something today, Rod, that beautifully illustrated it. You said people don't tend to die from wounds. You've got less chance of being alive in 5 years if you've had a diabetic foot ulcer than if you've had about five different types of cancer combined, including breast cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Can't remember what the other one is. So, but I think the thing is, people don't necessarily draw the dots because it might be that you're getting this foot ulcer because you're actually systemically very sick anyway. So you don't attribute the foot ulcer as the cause of death. Similarly, when people are in hospital, what we have observed is that they go into hospital perhaps because of another condition, because there's a problem with their cardiovascular system. But then because they've got a wound, they stay in hospital a lot longer. But if someone's going around with a clipboard going, well, why are all these people in hospital? They'll say, oh, they're here because they've got a cardiovascular injury. So I think it is very difficult to get this data. And I think what we have to understand is that without this data, we're never going to be a public health priority. But I think to your point, Kate, you know, we need more public awareness, because I think that there is times where people who really back a cause and make a lot of noise about it can actually make differences to public health. Mm, and the example that I always give, because I used to do a bit of research in medicinal cannabis, is medicinal cannabis for kids. And, you know, there were these kids whose epilepsy was so bad, they were fitting 40 times a day. There was nothing the medical system could offer them. And the parents jumped up and down. And eventually, the government changed policy to enable this.
And you're absolutely right, Fran. It is jumping up and down in front of governments that can actually attract funding or to raise awareness of these issues. And it's sad, but that's the true fact of government funding for spending on these conditions, is that you absolutely have to jump up and down and lobby. And it's those who lobby hardest on behalf of certain conditions who attract funding and prevention programs for those particular types of conditions.
The squeaky wheel gets the oil and that
absolutely
kind of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. But also, I just wanted to go back to Fran's point as well. You're 100% correct in that when people go into hospital with a cardiovascular condition, for example, it's not coded as a wound. And that's one of the problems. We don't have that actual solid base of data to show what the prevalence of wounds are in hospital, because it's in medical records, but the coding is really suboptimal as well. And that would be a really great way of actually improving the database around wounds, if that could be improved.
Is a wound often a reason to be admitted to hospital? Would there be many sheets that said reason for admission wound? Short of sort of accidents,
yeah, I mean,
where people have cut their leg with a chainsaw.
It was quite interesting. We did some very basic research at a hospital where there was a waiting time to get into a wound clinic that was longer than it should have been. So we tried to figure out what happened to the people while they were waiting, and 10% of them ended up going through emergency, and a lot of those got admitted to hospital. So a lot of people do go to hospital with a wound, because if you have a severe wound infection and you need IV antibiotics or an amputation or something, then you will go to hospital. But a lot of the time, people will go to hospital with something else, and this might actually highlight a problem that they've got with a wound, and then they might say, well, you need to stay in a bit longer while we try and stabilize this wound. So yeah, it's a bit of both, I suppose.
But also, you know, we GP data is really underreported. So there are some measures in place at the moment to try and extract data from GP surgeries, but they are a business model in New South Wales. We don't have a connected data system between GP surgeries. And we know that lots of people with wounds will present to community and general practice. So there's no way. I mean, that's been recorded in the medical records, but there's no way of being able to extract that data on a large scale so that we can actually look at the prevalence of wounds in the community health setting as well.
Wow. And there is data out there that shows that the majority of wounds present to a GP, because when you get sick, you go to a GP, don't you? And if the GPs are seeing the wounds and it's not being recorded. And I think that's one problem. And I think the other issue is, I don't think that a lot of them would necessarily have the equipment and so on and so forth that, for instance, you'd find in a big tertiary hospital. So they can't even do it if they want to.
Mm. And also the GPs who are seeing those wounds, I mean, this is making a bit of an assumption, you might be able to clarify on this, but people whose wounds are long-standing and there's issues around those wounds, are there often other factors like mental health and other things that will be a driver of poorer wound outcomes? And so the GP's got a lot to deal with within a particular 15-minute time slot?
Absolutely, because if you think about it, wounds should heal. I mean, when your child falls off its skateboard, and you've had five boys, so you know about kids falling off skateboards.
We do.
Then you don't sit there worrying at night whether the wound's going to heal. You just assume that it will. So when wounds don't heal, it's because people have lost their robustness. And when people have lost their robustness, they have many chronic medical conditions, generally speaking. And I think, you know, this is often why people probably stay in hospital for longer when they have a wound, because it's the first time anyone's ever paid any particular attention to it. So it is very difficult. And we see a lot of people bouncing around different medical systems, and the wound is always just a very peripheral thing, because if someone's, you know, going to die, if you don't sort their heart out, you're not so worried about their wound.
And that also speaks to priorities of GPs as well, doesn't it? Because as you say, if someone's got a wound, they probably do have a lot of other comorbidities. And it's quite feasible a GP is going to be concentrating on those other perhaps more acute problems like vascular issues or cardiovascular issues or poorly managed diabetes. And wounds actually may be really quite underdone in the GP setting as well.
I think you're right, undoubtedly. And we have an advisory board and the GP on there was saying that, you know, most GPs don't have this specialist level of knowledge. And I don't say this with any malice towards GPs. I mean, the GP job is virtually impossible these days, isn't it? I mean,
agreed.
When you consider what they used to do and what they have to do now, there's no way they can be across all of it. And as you say, when the Medicare rebates are relatively low, it's very hard for them to spend an hour and a half with a newly presented ulcer, which is probably what they need.
Agreed.
Kate, you've mentioned the word funding a couple of times. Is that the answer? Is it always the answer? Are there other things we could be doing, looking at, campaigning or advocating for that might help us to learn more and then better treat or more effectively treat this whole issue of wounds in the public health system?
I certainly think that campaigning advocacy has a part in this because, as we've already discussed, you need to advocate with peak bodies and with governments, so federal and state governments, to actually attract funding to this type of thing. And I mean funding to set up, for example, wound care nurses out in general practices, so people with expert knowledge who can actually prevent wounds from progressing to something more chronic. But I think we do need to have some sort of funding to bring all of these different bits of data together that we've spoken about and to actually do some really good research around the impacts of wounds on people's lives, for example, and to look at the progression of wounds and the outcomes of wounds as well. Because in the absence of that, it's really difficult to then advocate to have something like wounds.
What is it you're advocating
what
for?
What are you advocating for? You know, we've got the economic costs, but we don't really have that. I think social impact is really important when it comes to trying to advocate for these types of different conditions.
So you're saying that I should go back to academia, Kate? And
Oh, Fran.
I think that ship sailed.
Yeah.
I don't let Fran be czar for a day, Kate. You're almost the czar as the president of the Public Health Association.
She's as close as we've ever got.
That's
isn't
exactly
she?
Right. If I made you czar for a day or for a week, you can't help but be totally intimidated, even as a layperson, if you zoom back and look at the whole health system. It's an almost incomprehensible beast. What would you do? What do you do? Are wounds, for all the criticisms we made, are they kind of in their rightful place within the system at the moment?
Well, if the figures that Fran has given us are true this morning, then they're not in the rightful place because clearly they, number one, cost a lot of money to treat, which is probably not the first thing I should be mentioning, but they do have significant health and social impact on people. And it's comparable to, as Fran said, you know, the mortality rate is comparable to certain cancers from particular types of wounds, from diabetic foot ulcers. So I don't think they are in the rightful place. There's obviously a significant burden of disease. There's a significant impact on the health economy. And so they really do need to be brought up and something done to try and get more attention to it. And maybe one way of doing that is trying to group them together as wounds rather than as their individual classification of wounds, which I think is one of the main issues.
I think you might be right, actually.
Does that by default mean that some other area of public health has to lose something for wounds to gain? Is that how it works?
Pretty much, because there's only one finite bucket. And as we've learnt recently, governments really aren't prepared to start spending more on health unless it's wins votes. So, you know, they'll spend more on hospitals. But really, the health budget's finite and you just can't keep spending money unless, of course, they start investing in prevention and stop people from getting wounds in the first place. And that way they might actually start saving some money on acute health funding.
That's kind of about the whole health system, isn't it? In some ways, we've got it backwards. We've financially incentivized illness as opposed to health, haven't we? We call it a health system, but the money's only spent where people are sick. And the GP is a classic example, is that the more often they see you, the more money is there. Now, they don't think that way, you would hope, but it seems a silly way to incentivize a health system, doesn't it?
Exactly right. So if the government actually spent $1 on every person when they first presented to the health system, they'd save $14 in healthcare costs. So prevention is really key. That's a known figure. And really, I mean, obviously I'm talking as a public health person now, but we just want people to stop getting sick in the first place. And if you think about wounds, for example, the amount of burden of disease that you could save and social and healthcare costs as well by preventing those wounds in the first place by, for example, preventing diabetes or even treating diabetes well so that it was well managed and people didn't go on to have diabetic foot ulcers, it would make enormous difference, not just to health budget, but also to the quality of these people's lives.
Absolutely. And I think this prevention thing really does need to be more closely looked at in terms of wounds. And I know in the UK, for example, they have lots of these walking groups because they know if people go out and get some exercise, then they can do it in a supervised manner and they can have a bit of fun. It's good for their mental health. It's probably good for their cardiovascular health. And if they've got diabetes, it's probably good for their diabetes and might go some way to preventing them from getting a foot ulcer. So I think that prevention is a huge thing. And certainly when I started my studies in the diabetic foot, I was all about wound healing. And then I realized that ship sailed when they've got that ulcer. Mm-hmm. It's actually prevention is much more important. So thanks for highlighting that, Kate.
Yeah, indeed. Just on that, a question for both of you, but I'll start with you first, Fran. I'm not sure it's a solvable problem, but when most of us lay people think about wounds, we think about cutting our finger or a more serious wound where you might cut yourself with a chainsaw. They're not really the wounds we're talking about here, though, are we? I'm not sure the public necessarily makes the connection between a diabetic foot ulcer being a wound, and they're the ones where these issues are thrown up. I'm not sure how you overcome that, but is that a fair...
Absolutely, because as we said earlier, most wounds heal. That's a normal thing to happen. And I could bang on for hours about why wounds don't heal, but sometimes...
And indeed have. Several episodes in the backlog if you'd like to come and listen.
But I think one of the key things is if a wound has not met its milestones, then, you know, that's when you need to start having these higher level interventions. And an example I can give is Beryl's out in Coles and someone rams her with a shopping trolley. If that had been Kate McBride, she might say a naughty word, go home, clean it with a bit of soapy water and shove a band-aid on it, and that's it done. Beryl might do exactly the same, but because Beryl is older and more frail and her skin's more fragile, hers doesn't heal. And then down the track, when she goes finally to the doctor, she's diagnosed as, you know, having a big leg ulcer, and maybe it's related to a venous problem that she's got, so she's now got a venous leg ulcer. And so a lot of the time, wounds don't just spontaneously appear.
No.
They're caused by something, and they're caused by very similar things that all wounds are caused by, but a lot of the time, they're complicated by other diseases, like especially people with diabetes can't feel their feet, so they're going to have more accidents. If they tread on something, they might not know about it.
We all hate pain, don't we? But my goodness, it serves an important purpose. In the world, doesn't
it? The gift of pain.
When you tread on a nail, you need to know you've trodden on a nail, because if you don't, that's when you're really in trouble. You got any thoughts about that, Kate, that what people think of as wounds compared to what we're talking about here as being the sort of problematic wounds for the public health system? And is that perhaps one area of that public awareness campaign, which we know can work? It's worked with smoking. It works somewhat to an extent with gambling. We know that there are public campaigns can help. That awareness of it's not when you cut yourself with the saw that's the problem. It's when, as Fran says, grandma gets bashed with something on the leg and then it turns into something bigger.
I think there's very, very low public awareness about those types of wounds because, as you say, people generally perceive a wound to be, you know, you nick yourself with a chainsaw, for example.
I only keep saying that because it actually happened to my neighbour on my property once. Right. We were cutting down a tree and he nicked himself with a chainsaw. It was the most frightening thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's quite a low awareness about that. But also in general, there's low awareness about those determinants of health or those issues around health that can drive those wounds being exacerbated and more long-term as well. So in general, there's fairly low health literacy in the population, and wounds are very much a part of that. And there's a real lack of understanding because they're not sexy, let's face it. I mean, Fran has in the past shown me wounds when I've been eating my lunch, and they're not sexy. And people don't want these things on the front of their Daily Mirror or whatever newspaper they read these days.
Or
and
on
it's
their
not
sugary treats.
Or on, treats packet. But, you know, it's not something we don't have. Because if you think about cigarette packets, for example, I mean, they're the same sort of type of images, right? But that's been a really public health driven campaign because we know that smoking causes lung cancer, and we've had a big effort getting those images out and really raising public awareness about that. But there just isn't that sort of same drive in public health for wounds, or the same, and so there's no public awareness around things like diabetic foot ulcers.
And also they are quite confronting. Like the other day I was making a PowerPoint, because that's what I do in my substantive job. I don't
let
just
me
do
guess
podcasts.
You were trawling through hundreds and of pictures of wounds,
and I put a picture of the wound onto the PowerPoint slide, and sometimes PowerPoint likes to try and put a caption on it and it said pizza. So, you know, that's kind of the yucky things that we look at. So it's very hard because people don't want them in their face. face. They don't want to look at pictures of wounds. And the other thing is they don't really have much awareness. And people ask me all the time, why do people with diabetes get more foot ulcers? Mm. And that shows that they know people with diabetes get more foot ulcers because they're asking why. But most people don't even know that people with diabetes get foot ulcers.
No, so even people with diabetes don't manage it particularly well don't know that. There's evidence out there to show that people with diabetes don't always know that they're going to get a foot ulcer if not well managed.
So we almost need like an early warning system for these people, don't we? That you have to treat something as something that's severe before it becomes severe.
Interesting question here, Kate. I don't know whether there is any evidence about this, but the images on the cigarette packets don't seem to have worked for most smokers. I would imagine they're very powerful for people to not take up smoking. Do we know if that's true? Is there anything to learn from that?
It's really hard to pick apart the evidence on the images on the cigarette packages because they happened at the same time as lots of things like tax reform, introduction of smoking cessation packages, supported nicotine patches and that sort of thing. So everyone knows it's really difficult to pick apart that. But we do know that our smoking cessation rates are incredible in Australia, some of the best in the world. And we've also stopped people from starting smoking
which is what the real goal is. If you
people are starting to vape now, but that's a completely different. They're all vaping instead. It's a completely different. It's a new option, isn't it?
It's been sold as a safe option.
It has.
And that's dangerous.
We could get very much into that, and it will cause problems down the track because we're going to start getting people with vascular problems again and poor wound healing because of the nicotine that's in the supposed non-nicotine vapes. But we would digress a lot if we went into that. Yeah.
Although there are lessons to learn broadly, aren't there, about how you deal with sort of what we're talking about here is public health issues and awareness and campaigns you could take from wherever to help with wounds if wounds is your area of interest. If there's something about the smoking campaigns that's worked, something about the breast cancer campaigns that's worked, I mean, it'd be amazing to have a full test day of the cricket at one of the stadiums devoted to wound awareness as we do with breast cancer awareness.
Yeah, it would. That's powerful, isn't it? But I think the issue here is that wounds are quite stigmatising, and Fran will be able to speak more to this. But, you know, to have quite a nasty wound, it's not cosmetically attractive. So if you think about breast cancer, for example, people are wearing headscarves and they've got pink things and it's all, you know, quite nice, even though people are going into quite severe cancer treatment. I mean, it glamorises people going through chemotherapy, which is really quite awful. But so wounds, it's really difficult to glamorise them, as we've already spoken about. I mean, you can't make a wound look pretty. And so they will never have a place, for example, at a full test day of cricket, because you're not going to be showing, you're not going to get people wearing wound hats, for example, you know, to show what wounds look like.
Hats with pus on them and things like that.
No, and that's the problem, you know, because... Yeah, you're not going to get people wearing hats with pus on them.
Really is kind of a marketing issue, isn't it? We've talked about this before. So I once worked in the tyre business. It's the number one grudge purchase in the world. Nobody wants to buy tyres. And if they do, even if you sell tyres, you don't want to talk to them because that's a little unusual and not quite right. But there has to be ways to try and do it, doesn't it? Maybe what we need to do is look at other industries or sectors where they've had that difficulty of something that's just not interesting. How do you make it interesting for people?
And I think Kate, you know, has made some great points around we need the research that underpins it, but we need the advocacy. And I think that that is something that is not as robust as it should be for wounds at the moment.
Whose job is that, Fran? Sorry, Kate. Whose job is that?
Well,
it becomes a really interesting question all of a sudden, doesn't it? Is it Convatec's job? Is it Wounds Australia's job? Is it some gathering of all of you together?
Oh, Rod, it's not often I'm lost for words, is it?
Is it doctors' jobs? Whose job is it to do that?
It's got to be everybody, because people have got to group together, because there's always strength in numbers. So the more people are advocating for a particular issue, the more strength there is in that approach, right?
Absolutely. So I think we do need to have more patient centricity. So I think the patients who are suffering from wounds need to have a voice. I think that's exceptionally powerful. I think that people like Convatec do have a responsibility. And to be quite frank, we also have a vested interest in highlighting this problem, because then there'll be better care for people. And so I think Convatec are very on board with trying to highlight the problem. But it's always very difficult when it doesn't have as much money thrown at it. You know, like the peak body for wounds probably doesn't have as much money as the peak body for diabetes, for example. And it probably doesn't have the membership. So I think, you know, they have to really figure out what will drive people to want to join this community as well. And sometimes if it's just like, oh, well, you get a a free hat and we're back to hats again, aren't we? I don't think you get a free hat with Wounds Australia.
You lost a hat or something this week, Fran? What's happened there?
But I think people have to have a compelling reason to join the crowd. And I think that different things appeal to different people, don't they? And I think we have to understand what the drivers are to increase this advocacy.
Yeah, and I think it's not just necessarily public awareness around the wounds themselves, but maybe around screening and around, you know, what could actually happen to wounds. Because if you think about colorectal cancer, for example, that is definitely not a sexy disease. There's been a number of problems over the last few years in trying to get people to realize it's actually the second highest cancer killer in Australia. But they have got screening and people are aware about the screening. So they focused on screening for colorectal cancer rather than the disease itself. So it might well be that that might be a more successful way of doing advocacy around wounds is, you know, checking wounds and getting them checked out by doctors, for example, before they get too far and raising awareness in that way.
Geez, I think you're onto something there, Associate Professor McBride.
Thanks, Henshaw.
She's quite bright, isn't she?
Yeah, no, I think, because if you think about it, there's like loads of awareness around skin cancers. Like everybody goes and gets a skin cancer check. And I'm not suggesting that everyone has to go and stand and be looked at for wounds, because generally, if you just look at your own body or get someone you live with to do it, you can find a wound quite easily.
Or but create one.
But you,
especially if you live with someone.
That's exactly, you're asking your partner to have a look. That's not always necessarily so. Anyway.
So it's one of those situations where if you have a mole that's changing, you don't just sit there and go, oh, I might go to
look
the doctor
at that.
Next
it's
year.
Lovely.
The education is there that you sound the alarm bells and it gets biopsied and you're in a system very quickly. And I think that system for looking after wounds does exist to greater and lesser degrees, depending on where you live. But people are not seeing the urgency in accessing it. They're doing the watch and wait, aren't they, for too long?
Exactly right. Because if you think about Beryl, who we spoke about earlier, who got nudged by the trolley, she will have certain vascular problems that, you know, she's already got them, so she's going to get the wound. So you can't prevent the wound itself, but maybe you can encourage her to see early treatment so that it doesn't progress too far.
And there's a lot of data that suggests that the earlier you get a wound, the better its healing trajectory is.
We've fairly quickly wandered really from health, haven't we, in some ways, to health messaging, which is probably important in all areas of health, but in this one where exactly as you say, once you've got a wound, that's kind of the too late. How do you prevent wounds? Well, it's actually other things that you prevent, like diabetes. So there's interesting things around the messaging, I suspect. What it does need is some sort of group approach. Fran, I know we could talk to Associate Professor, President Kate, all day, but have we exhausted what we wanted to about this topic yet, or have I missed something important that we need to...
Well, I was lost for words earlier. I don't think that's ever happened on a podcast.
It on tape.
I'm still stunned.
We'll send this around Convatec internally, internationally, and the response will be enormous.
So... yeah, I think this has been a great discussion and I think we've really thrown up a lot of problems and a lot of things that are not fair and not right. But importantly, we've also come up with a lot of solutions. So I'm about to climb onto my sandwich board and head down the road with my Uzi the Wound on my front.
So did you say Uzi the Wound?
That's the mascot for Wounds Australia. Uzi? Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the problems then.
I say nothing.
What would you do, Kate? Well, what would you do? How do you market wounds? I'm at a bit of a loss, but you need to get a bunch of really clever marketing minds into a room, don't you?
Yeah, look,
say, fix it for us.
I think we've already sort of touched on it. I don't think it's the wounds itself that you're ever going to be able to market, because, you know, we touched it. We also spoke about colorectal cancer as well. You can't market that, but thinking about how you can market around it raise awareness around screening, for example, or prevention of wounds is probably a smarter way of doing it.
I reckon Kate needs to come and work for Convatec. She's got some great ideas. We like people with ideas.
Indeed we do, and that's what this podcast is about, ideas. We don't necessarily answer all the questions, but sometimes asking them is the most important first step, and perhaps we've done some of that today. Dr. Frampton, great to have you along.
Thanks, Rod.
And Dr. Kate, what an absolute pleasure to have you back in the studio. It's been fantastic to hear your dulcet tones again. You're always thoughtful, interesting, articulate and intelligent. You've been that again today, so thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for this episode. We'll be back next time here on The Wound Doctors.